compositing going on. We have a consensus to include and a recommendation to expand beyond cancer alone. Okay? So that's all in. So then let me take 418, 420, 421. And just as a show of hands, our recommendation has been to include these. We support the direction with modification, but they're not for inclusion today. So all those in favor? Right. 418, 420, 421. We support the direction with modifications. Right. Okay. That looks like consensus to me. And then 558, which is our last one. We're including 557, but 558, show of hands in support of this low bar, but effort to close the gap. All those in favor of continuing with 558? They're paired? Well, so if we want 557, we have to have 558. So that being the case, we're voting to include 557 and 558 together. All those in favor? All right. Lunch. Thank you, everybody.
Frank, with the
take
last
a break
two,
for lunch?
You didn't mention the last two.
We did those first.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Actually, before we break for lunch, let me open for public comment. Operator, could you open the lines for public comment?
At this time, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. At this time, there are no questions.
Thank you. In the room? All right. We are on break for lunch. For those on the line, we will attempt to reconvene in 30 minutes. Near 1 o'clock. So let's reconvene, operator. Arnika?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Could you make sure our line is they're open? We're going to reconvene our meeting.
Yes, sir. Your lines are open.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
So we had concluded most of our measure exercises, and now we're going to look at some measure gaps and gap filling pathways to address some of these implementation questions and barriers. And we've actually got some great lead discussions on this. And so, are we starting with Kevin? Are we starting with you?
Yeah.
Kevin, if you would, please.
Again, I'm from the Office of National Coordinator of Health IT. We are developing measures there for use in the Meaningful Use Program, and there are some things to know about how that program works and how that impacts what we think about. The goal of the Meaningful Use Program is to build an infrastructure of health IT across the country, interoperable healthcare records that can be exchanged. As well as the ability to create an automated measurement infrastructure. So the measures that we are looking to create are ones that can be automatically collected out of care, as opposed to ones that, like many measures now, are retrospective in nature. So if you think about a chart abstraction measure, it is necessarily looking backwards, and someone is reviewing through time in a backwards-looking way. Even coding, especially inpatient coding, is a sort of retrospective activity. The measures that we're creating are capturing things as they occur and then aggregating those into some measurement framework. The two kinds of measures that we create are those for eligible providers, and eligible providers are physicians, nurse practitioners, dentists. There are a few others, but essentially people working in clinics who see enough Medicare and Medicaid patients and are not super specialists. Many of the specialists qualify, but some of the sort of more super specialists don't qualify. And then eligible hospitals, which again, you're eligible based on how much Medicare or Medicaid billing that you have. The reason I mention those contexts is because we are often asked, gee, what about the nurses? What about the long-term care? What about lots of other really important groups and stakeholders? The way the Meaningful Use Program was conceived of and the way that the legislation works, those groups are not eligible as providers, so we are not actively pursuing measurement that is aimed primarily at those groups. We certainly are looking at measurements of teamness, but we're not actively pursuing the measurement under the Meaningful Use Program for non-eligible providers. The program is a three-stage program. Probably most of you know this. Stage one has been up and going for over a year. Stage two, the proposed rule for stage two, came out in early March or late February, I guess it was, and it was there are, I think, 140, 125, I can't remember the exact number, of measures proposed in that proposed rule. Between CMS and us at ONC, we are currently building all of those measures as what we call e-specified measures. So these are measures that will be automatically captured within electronic health records. As part of that process, we are most of the measures we're using are NQF-endorsed measures, and we are doing what's called retooling them for use in this automated world. And there's a fair bit that we learn in retooling measures because we move them from one platform to another. The other group of measures that we're creating are what are called de novo measures, which are measures that haven't previously existed. And we're creating them for use in this program with the plan of bringing them to NQF for endorsement after the measures are fully specified in the way that they can come to the bodies for endorsement. Again, as part of the program, we are looking to execute on the national quality strategy. And so we are trying to assure that we have measures that fit into all of the domains of the quality strategy and to make sure that we cover all the types of eligible providers. So, for example, dentists are eligible providers for us. So we would ideally like to have measures in each of the National Quality Strategy domains that are meaningful to dentists. And if you start thinking about what does a care coordination measure look like for a dentist, it's actually a whole different animal than what we're typically thinking about in care coordination for a primary care provider. So we sometimes are working in margins of strategy and providers that haven't made it through other systems very much yet. So that's just some overall general comments. The rules that we're building will be released. So the proposed rule had a large number of measures. There will be less measures in the final rule. That is currently undergoing internal governmental review and discussion, so the actual number is not really knowable until that final rule comes out. But the final rule is proposed to come out early this fall. So I think to a couple of the issues that we're finding, one is that the NQF-endorsed measures that get retooled often struggle to move from one platform to another. And by platform, what I mean is if it was a claims-based HEDIS measure, moving it into a clinical practice where it's captured right at the point of care may or may not work very well. It may or may not make much sense. So, for example, a measure of patient adherence to medications, looking at claims of how often did a patient actually fill their prescription at a pharmacy, is something that a insurer can see, CMS can see. Providers right now do not have a window into seeing that. Another one that has really st- stymied us in the care coordination is measures of transition. So if you're a payer, you can see that patient A went from this hospital to that hospital within 2 days. When I try to build a measure that says, how often did you do a medication reconciliation after the patient was discharged from a nursing home? The very first question out of a doctor's mouth is, how do I know the patient was in a nursing home? And how do we come up with the denominator that I can reliably measure at a doctor's office of how many patients were in a nursing home? I can't get that denominator. And so until I can get that denominator, there's no way that I can build a numerator that has any meaning. Similarly, transitions from hospitals to clinic. Can't get that denominator because the doctors don't have a window. Their data system doesn't have knowledge of how many times in which patients were admitted to the hospital. So even these fairly basic things in care transitions that we've actually been able to measure in claims for a while, we can't really measure in that same way when we think of this from the perspective of a provider because they don't have access in a systematic way to that data. Then another one of the issues we like, as I mentioned before, we would really love and the federal advisory committees that are part of this. You're all welcome to listen in on all of our federal advisory committees are open to the public. There are a number of them. There's one that works on care coordination. There's one that works on patient care planning. There are a couple of them that work on quality measurement. Those are all open to the public, and we welcome you to listen in or come in person to hear the discussion. As that group has thought about this care plan idea and really wanting to make sure that the patient is part of the care plan process, a couple of the issues are we don't have, and we were just talking about this over lunch, we don't have as a country a notion of a shared care plan that we can all sort of talk about and we know what we're talking about and we're sure that when a physical therapist is talking to a mental health professional, is talking to a nurse, is talking to a dentist, that when they say care plan, they all actually mean the same thing and that they all go to the same place and think about that concept in the same way. And until there's some kind of conceptual agreement about that and how it works, it's hard for us to operationalize it in technology. So the technology people sometimes have to wait for the kind of providers of policy and consensus to first get consensus, and then we can build supporting technology. It's sort of this typical informatics conundrum where people would love the tool that really does the job, but the tool doesn't know what to do until you tell us how to build it. So tell us how to build it, and then we'll build you the tool that does the job you need. So that's an issue. The second issue that we are actively working on is how to assure that the patient actually is part of their care planning. And again, as I said over lunch, when we do something for e-measures called feasibility testing, which means that when we get the measure, we actually take it out to the field, to typically a practice, and we talk to the practice experts and to often their electronic health record vendor, and we say, how doable is this measure? And they scored on a 5-point Likert scale. Yes, I can do this. No, I can't do this. So if we would take out to them and say, we want you to measure how often was a patient part of a shared decision-making care plan. We know right now what they would say is, well, we can't do that. And we would say, why? Well, because our patients don't have access to the computers. We don't have enough computers for the patients in our clinics. We don't know how we would put their information in the medical record. None of that is known. So the option we have is we can put a checkbox that says, check, did the patient acknowledge their care plan? What I also know is if I come here and tell you I built a checkbox measure that said, I've got a checkbox that the nurse checks that the patient heard about their care plan, I'd get a big thumbs down. So our committee is busy working on what are the specifications from a data and interoperability standpoint of assuring that that patient is who they say they are and making sure that the medical record can accept that patient in the same way that it accepts a doctor or a nurse. So we'll get the standards going, but we'll still have this feasibility question. How soon will it take your organization to put in place all the computers, all the access controls, all the login functions that all of your patients can check their own box that they heard that the care plan was, that they were part of this care planning process? So, I mean, those are just to lay out some of the kinds of ways that we think about this and the sort of challenges we come up with when we're actively trying to wrestle with these very issues. But we still are working hard to execute on this goal of having care coordination as part of the meaningful use measure set. So just because there are challenges doesn't mean we're not working hard to do that. So one thing I brought up over the break is there is one measure that is in the proposed rule, 0403 HIV/AIDS medical visits, which is a measure of patients with HIV or AIDS and did they get the appropriate number of visits to their primary care doctor in a given year, which is very guideline-based. The guidelines are really clear about it, and the evidence is clear about that those patients do better than other patients. The reason I bring it up as a care coordination measure is because in order to improve on that measure, it requires a care coordination infrastructure because it's a measure of who didn't come. And in order to figure out who didn't come and get them to come, it's not about doing something better or different in the visit. It's about doing something better and different in all the rest of the outside the visit work. And that's a care coordination activity. So it's not really called care coordination, and it's, again, focused for a very specific patient population, but it's a measure that's been in existence for quite a while and actually has shown to benefit patients and patient outcomes. Another one that's in the proposed rule is a measure called closing the referral loop. And again, we had to think really carefully about what measures could we do in this real-time live capture of data from providers in their practices and was aimed at these primary care doctors. And so the goal of this measure is to measure how often when a referral was made that the doctor actually received the report back of that referral. And again, it's not patient shared decision-making care planning, but it is a tracking function that's important to many patients, and it's the kind of thing that we think forwards the whole interoperability landscape. Because if people feel that they need to be sure that they're always tracking these, they're likely going to come up with ways to send these electronically and track these things electronically that starts to build this web of interconnected primary care doctors and specialists. And that measure, as we proposed it, will apply to any provider that wants to use it. So a dentist could use it, a cardiologist could use it, whoever is actually doing a referral could use that measure to say, 80% of the time when I refer somebody, I'm confident that I'm getting that referral message back. And a bit like this HIV/AIDS visit, probably the care coordination part of it isn't the part in the visit. It's all the stuff that you as a practice have to do between the visits to make sure that you're executing on this measure. So I guess with that, I'll leave my comments and open it up for questions either now or after the other speakers spoken as well.
Why don't we open up now, because I'm also a little worried, make sure we keep you on your timeline.
Yeah, I've got to call it too, which is why.
Okay. So a lot of great thoughts and comments there, Tom.
Okay, I'll admit I'm a neophyte on Epic, but it seems to me that just to the point about a lot of that patient engagement could be done asynchronously by sending an email through a secured system, and that way you don't have to have another set of computers and try to do it during the office visit.
Yeah, so we could certainly do measures of patient portal. So the patient portal is required as part of meaningful use, and that's a patient access to their record. We know that in the very best of places that have been using a portal for a long time and encourage its use, they get about 40 to 60% use. So that still means that we would have some group of patients that have not been using the portal that we would have to decide either are not part of the measure or that's just your failure as part of a doctor for not getting your patients in the portal.
Your failure. David?
Thank you for that great summary. You guys have been thinking hard and thinking well. I was actually going to make exactly the same comment that Tom made. When I heard you say, gee, all those physician offices aren't really equipped with all the computers they would need to have their patients interact with the system, their system, I just thought, I don't see how we could afford that. And yet we have so many folks with either home computers or smartphones or both. And can't we just keep working towards that medium being the one? And yes, it will not catch everybody all at once, but it seems like the logical way to move things. Eventually we'll catch on and people will get it, and there may be ways to facilitate.
Again, we're working very hard at the patient authentication standards to make sure that we know, we're calling it a trusted identity in cyberspace. So when you say that you are who you are, we're sure that that's you. And then, even more complicated, when you're speaking for your demented mother, are we sure that you're really her son? And those are all the kinds of things that when we start thinking about this on a cell phone or in other kinds of technology, that we're very conscious of doing that and doing it well and protecting people's rights and patient identity, but at the same time allowing them access to all this information. So it's a big challenge that a lot of smart people are trying to figure out. I agree with you, the phones are a very likely medium for us to do this. There's a huge market penetration in smartphones. Is that my question back to you? Is if you're a patient, is that where you want to review and say that your care plan was appropriate? So coming at this from the patient side, it's always what's the thing that would provide most value to you as a patient, not necessarily what's cheapest for us as providers.
Not to mention the burn phones that most of my patients use, and they change a phone every week. Dana?
So, Kevin, I think you applaud and agree that where you're headed with your team of people that towards the patient authentication and patient engagement, actually in the care planning process is important. But I think that, there is an interim step that really needs to occur anyway, and that is still with the care planning processes and education and engaging the patient for shared decision making, is that actually needs to occur. That is about the clinician working with the patient to review, to give the patient's input, develop the care, the care plan and the plan of care, and then to go through a process to make sure that the patient understands that. And that's just not a one-time conversation. That's a dynamic conversation that needs to occur with follow-up later on down the road, too. Now, where you're headed with the patient authentication piece and actively involved in the electronic health record, I think that still needs to be the long-term goal. But I think particularly for us and some of what we're working at with here and some of the measures, we need to be thinking about how the clinician and documenting how the clinician is actively, working with the patients as well. I have one other question too, Kevin. So you talked about that, you're focused on eligible providers. Is that also the measures for eligible hospitals as well?
Correct.
Okay.
It's eligible providers and eligible hospitals. And most hospitals are eligible. You have to do a certain amount of Medicare or Medicaid business to be eligible. So it's really only hospitals that don't do enough Medicare or Medicaid business are not eligible. And it's a minority of the hospitals. I think the providers, 50 or 60% of all providers in the U.S. are eligible. And again, it's a mixture of people that don't do enough Medicare, Medicaid business and people who are kind of super specialists that they decided weren't part of the program.
Nancy?
So, Kevin, let me join the chorus in thanking you for a great presentation and a quick synopsis of an enormous amount of work that's been going on. And I think I'm maybe thinking a little bit like David. Don't fall off your chair, right? Or David. But
you may have to sit together at the next meeting.
I would like that. But the my assertion would be that I think that over the next several years we're going to change the way we think about collecting data and change how we collect the data that we need to drive quality. But there are I expect there will always be patient surveys, and maybe that's a better vehicle for getting patient input on whether or not they're involved in their care in the way they need to be and whether they're involved in their care plan. Maybe. I'd like to at least raise that as an option for discussion. Maybe we'll never move away from using claims data to identify who's been readmitted or who's had that follow-up visit to the ER within 30 days of their original admission. Maybe that's the most effective way to get it. And so I'm hopeful that we can get to a conversation about how do we use these various mechanisms or tools in the most effective way to generate the data that we need to drive quality. Because in the end, I don't care if it comes from the EHR or it comes from claims data or anything else, as long as we can use it to improve the outcomes for patients.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think one of our visions around this automated data collection is the trouble now, and I'll speak as a provider and I'll speak as my previous job, I was a CMIO at a hospital, that claims data information about readmissions took 18 months to get to us. So we couldn't make any operational changes, really, based on that information because there was too much of a time lag. So part of the goal of this real-time data capture is that we can also provide some real-time visibility tools or near real-time visibility tools so people can make some changes to really drive the measures. Because in the end, measurement isn't what I care about. In the end, I care about patient care. And I don't want a measure that people fail on. I want a measure that gives them visibility into a way that they can improve patient care. So we're thinking about our measures and also what are the related tools that we can give providers to help them achieve good patient care using those measures. And the beauty of real-time measurement is at the same time, I might be able to give you an alert in your computer system that uses the same logic and says, hey, by the way, did you know this patient was just readmitted? And here's your alert while they're still waiting in the ER. If you want, you can go down and do something about it right now instead of 6 months later getting a report on a piece of paper that said your rate was too high.
Completely agree with you, and maybe that's something we can work on with the payers. I know there's a little lag in claims data because we are generating that lag, but you know maybe we can get some early feedback because there are a lot of payers now who are trying to generate that information to get it to the hospital that you have. You know, you have somebody in the ER that we've just been asked to admit, you know, authorize admission for. You might want to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just heard from the Delaware Health Information Exchange, and they actually have the ability to signal primary care doctors all across the state as soon as the patient was admitted to any hospital or the ER anywhere in the state of Delaware. And that's all live. And so that's the kind of infrastructure we're trying to help build, and measurement is only one part of that infrastructure.
Jerry?
Thank you. I thought you said in the beginning that you were beginning to look at team measures, which is so central to care coordination. Can you talk a little bit about that and where that's at and what the issues are?
Yeah, so the team-based care measures, we're looking at more on inpatient really than outpatient. And again, we're primarily doing things that are re-specifying measures that NQF already has. So if NQF already has good measures of team, then we're much more likely to be able to incorporate those team-based measures. And so these are more, you got to kind of read between the lines to see that that's really about a team. It's things like prevention of blood clots. So that's a combination of nursing activities, pharmacy activities, and doctor activities in a hospital, and we have a suite of measures in the proposed rule about how you could do that. It's impossible for any one of those people to make that happen. The doctor can't make that happen alone, the nurse can't make that happen alone, and the pharmacist can't make that happen alone, so they have to be a team to achieve those outcomes. So it's not really measuring the team, it's measuring the outcome that we know can only be achieved if the team works together.
Dolores?
This isn't so much a question for Kevin, although he has some thoughts on it. I'd be interested in hearing what they are, but I'm having a kind of a heretical thought, and it was triggered by David's comment about using smartphones and so on. Has anybody given any thought to the dangers of information overflow? I mean, I think about my own inbox at the office. I can't keep up with it, which is why I didn't do my homework.
What's a dog?
I think about these kids, and Richard and I were talking about this during the break, who sit there, but they can stand right in front of you and theoretically be having a conversation with you, but in fact they're sitting there, you know, with their thumbs going whackety, 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 communicating with God knows what kind of drivel to who. And are we how are we going to separate the real, the necessary, the important communications from ongoing just overload of data? It's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. After a while, you know, you just want to say, stop, I can't deal with all this.
So I think it's a great question. I've been doing this work for a long time, and lately the metaphor that I think really helps me is what we want is computer-assisted flying. So if you think of the way a jet pilot works, they're really smart, they're doing the right stuff, and they sometimes have a computer helping them fly. No one doesn't trust that the pilot isn't sharp and isn't good and isn't doing the right thing, but they also know that that plane couldn't fly that well and that safely without the computer. And so it's not about how often can you signal that pilot, how often can you shock him in his seat, and how many red lights can you turn on to get him to turn his attention this way and that way. That's all everyone knows distracting. It's how do you make sure the computer is really there supporting that pilot flying that jetliner. The state should be the same way for nurses. It should be the same way for the doctors. It should be the same way for the patients, that the information is there to support you and the computer is there to support you. It's not there to distract you. It's not there giving you unnecessary pop-up windows to advertise things that you don't want to see. We are a long ways from getting there, but there are places that have done it, like the computer-assisted flying, and I think that's what we're looking for in healthcare. So it's a lot of hard work by a lot of smart people. What you do is you sit down and you figure out what is the wheat, and that is a matter of what are important signals to find. So some places have done this really interesting work to early identify patients who might end up with sepsis. And there's a lot of data in these systems, and they're not finding any new data. What they're doing is the computer is constantly churning through all the data that the hospital knows about, all the blood pressures, all the blood tests, all the stuff that everybody knows about, and it runs an algorithm, and then it says, hey, by the way, doctor or nurse, among all this data, here's a patient that we think probably is at high risk for sepsis. And that is the ability to pull that wheat out of all of that information and give a signal that they couldn't see because there was so much going on. And that's only one early example, but it's the kind of thing we want to do more and more and more, but we have to have kind of standardized systems for this. And I'd also come back to you with a related question about the noise of measurement. So at my last organization, I was at a county hospital, we got a new chief quality officer who had us do an exercise that was really valuable. He set a nurse to figuring out how many measures were we tracking as a hospital, as a health system. 1,500. We had a spreadsheet of 1,500 measures across our organization that we were somehow keeping track of as part of federal, state, or payer programs. And I was leading a committee to try to whittle that down. And so we would just, like this group, we would tackle one at a time. We'd say, okay, it's time for diabetes. And everybody show us all your diabetes measures, and we're going to pick as an organization which one diabetes measure to use. And I think that I know that across government, across HHS, we're doing that work right now. And I know that the MAP is also doing that work. But I think that we have to decrease the measurement noise at the same time we decrease the actual data noise.
So, Dolores, just a note of caution on the flying example is someone who used to jump out of government airplanes on a regular basis. We did so because we knew they were being flown by computers, and they were built by the lowest bidder. I felt much better going out the window. Barbara?
Now, I was reminded of, we have a risk contract with a large physician group in Queens, New York, and they have asked each of their patients, some of whom are ours, if they can put a GPS thing, I don't know what it is, on their cell phones that sends a text to the group when somebody is sitting in the ER of any of the 7 local hospitals. But to use the pilot analogy, they have also hired hospitalists who staff 2 out of 3 shifts at each of those hospitals. So that's their way of doing care coordination.
Rhonda.
Causing havoc here, I think. I just want to ask a question. I'm sorry if it's been asked and I was out of the room. But with all the data that is being collected in the electronic medical records, is there any thought or any project or activity that is focused on creating patient registries, particularly in areas where we're still needing to understand from a practice evidence perspective what works, what doesn't work, for which patients with which characteristics and so forth?
Yeah, there is quite a bit of work. I think one of the challenges right now is so much of the electronic health record data is very heterogeneous. So from one site to another and from one place to another, we don't, as doctors, code things the same way very well. And a lot of our stuff we still put into dictated notes that aren't expressed as data that we can share very easily. But there is a lot of activity in that space. Part of the meaningful use program is that it's required for providers to create lists of patients with conditions, and they can pick which conditions they want to create the lists of. But they have to be able to create those lists for the use in care. So that's at the local individual provider registry level. But there's also quite a bit of activity in this thing called the learning health system. And the learning health system is how do you take the data that's collected across all these systems and figure out how we do just those kinds of tasks. How do we say, we know that there aren't very many cystic fibrosis patients in the country, so what if we could have a way to see what happens to the outcomes of cystic fibrosis patients under different conditions? And we would need, actually, to pool data from a lot of different places to know that very well, because no one place has enough cystic fibrosis patients really to answer that question for us. I think the cancer registries are farthest along in that work, and part of the proposed rule for meaningful use, too, is that organizations could submit their data to cancer registries and fulfill one of their requirements. So we're trying to figure out how we enhance the systems that already exist and how do we also build some new systems to do that work. But the learning health system is the activity that I think is most closely tied to this.
So as someone who was at the IOM meeting last week trying to connect all the registry work together, ONC is just key to that whole effort. I've got kind of a different question about this. To me, I think we did this backwards. I think, and now we're trying to repair it, and it's going to be extraordinarily expensive to repair. If I really wanted to design the system right, I would have created an electronic health record repository for the patients and then allowed the systems to have vendors that created apps for them to access the record. And that would have been my, it would have been my record wherever I went. Instead, we created records at the individual point, and they're all different. None of them talk to each other. Even when it's in the same company, you're on version 1.2, and I'm on version 2.1, and those two aren't, they don't speak, and nothing happens. And so I feel like we thought we were building the endoskeleton, and what we've actually built is the exoskeleton. And now you're trying to back re-engineer down to the patient. So I look at it as any opportunity you can enrich the portal, the patient portal, and create the standardized data elements so that every vendor is dumping into a patient portal that ultimately could be on an app that anybody has appropriate access can get to that information. Then I can do all this patient survey stuff. I can get the information right from the real outcome point, the patient, and I can track all this. But we've created a multi-billion dollar nightmare to fix the way we built it. And I'm afraid we did it backwards, and we don't have a choice with that. It's out there.
And I'll just say you get what you incent, and you get what you measure, right? And so the electronic health records started as practice management billing systems because what were they incented by was making sure their bills were effective. And so the billing system architecture is deep to the core of most electronic health record systems because that's what we incented. And they didn't incent care coordination, so it's not a big surprise that there's not much of a care coordination infrastructure because people weren't asking for it. Organizations weren't buying it, and so companies weren't building it. So you're right, but I would, you know, put the blame squarely back on us for creating a system that, that had the kind of incentives in place that it did.
Fair enough. Dana?
So, coming back to a question on e-measures and retooling and prioritization, I mean, several years ago, as I understand, the NQF-endorsed measures were kind of prioritized and put into different buckets of, you know, for retooling. And there was an initial, wave of that, and some of that occurred. And now that seems as though that lies more in the purview of back with HHS, CMS, ONC, and using subcontractors, and ONC's involved with that. How's that being approached now in terms of prioritization for retooling of e-measures?
Well, I can let NQF speak to part of this. So the federal government does not own all of the e-measure retooling. There's certainly e-measure retooling that's happening in the private sector without the federal government support. The federal government is supporting e-measure retooling under a few of its programs, especially meaningful use, but also PQRS, IQR, the Medicare Shared Savings Program, so that there is some other work across the federal agencies. We also have some other parts of the federal government retooling measures that are more program specific. So, for example, my office has a contract with SAMHSA to be retooling some behavioral health and building some behavioral health measures. Some of those are in the proposed rule. Others are just because SAMHSA wants to have more than just what's in meaningful use as potential measures to use in SAMHSA programs. So there is a fair bit of activity, and so the way that they're prioritized for the meaningful use program is against the national quality strategy, and then it's a conversation that primarily CMS has that says, you know, what does CMS want to have as its as a purchaser, as the biggest purchaser in the country, what does it want to know about care as it decides and it makes its purchasing decisions? So that's really how the meaningful use measures get prioritized. But there's a lot of input from groups like this, a a lot of input from the general public, a lot of input from federal advisory committees, but in the end, it's really a CMS decision about what are their goals of measurement. I can't speak as much to the private sector and who is deciding to e-specify measures and who isn't, and maybe, I don't know if you guys from NQF have more of a sense of that.
So we've been seeing some measure developers just routinely, as they bring their measures back for maintenance, go ahead and put them into specs for electronic health records. PCPI in particular has been doing more of that than some others, mainly because they had an option to have an extended time-limited testing period if they brought back e-specs. We're seeing a fair amount from that. I think we're also trying to see how we can get more of the de novo measures that Kevin talked about. People are actually starting to build a measure up front for an EHR as opposed to the backward retooling, which we've gotten just a couple of so far, but there has been more interest in that. And then, you know, finally, we're also just trying to think about what do we need to have in place to evaluate those as they come forward. And certainly, you know, Kevin and us have a shared pain about figuring out what feasibility testing means that we're going to try to work through in the coming year.
And I would say that we are looking for places, looking at places that have been doing this, but they maybe haven't called it measurement in the same way that we think of it. So, for example, we've been looking at some of the federal partners, Indian Health Service, the VA, the Department of Defense, that have been heavily invested and heavily live on electronic medical records for quite a while and actually have a pretty robust quality infrastructure. And they have measures, many of which have never been brought to NQF endorsement. So we think that many of those are kind of native measures to an EHR as opposed to immigrated from another platform to an EHR. And sometimes if they're native, they actually function really differently. So if you think about a measure that could happen in an EHR, it can require really complicated calculations. The EHR can do lots of math, and it can do lots of math really, really well. And so a measure that comes from an EHR may actually have a really complicated mathematical algorithm as part of it, but the inputs and outputs might be pretty simple. You know, it might be, so you can imagine something like an Apache score coming directly from an EHR. It's pretty hard for a human being to sit down and capture and calculate and grab all that data. You know, it's not that big a deal for an EHR to grab the different data elements as long as they exist, calculate it, and feed it forward. So we are hoping, and you guys can help us, to find places that are building these native e-measures that we can then use in the system. Things like the patient portal would be another fantastic place to grow an e-measure. The claims measures don't think about a patient portal, so there's no particular measure of patient portal activity. We could use website kind of logic and think about a measurement of care that looks at portal activity and say care coordination means that the patient, you know, responded to 30% of their messages on the portal. I don't know, I'm just making something up. But that's the kind of measure that would be native to an EHR that you wouldn't think of if you're building a claims-based measure or a paper-based measure, because it's not part of that landscape. It's not part of that world.
If I could, Kevin, you brought up the 403 HIV visits measure and closing a referral loop. I'm not sure the second measure has been spec'd out yet.
That one is undergoing development right now by NCQA. It's in the proposed rule for meaningful use, so it's not one that is NQF endorsed at this point, but it is in the proposed rule for meaningful use, and with the plan that if it is in the final rule that it would come through NQF for endorsement at that time.
So to the first one then, because I don't know we can do much about commenting on an unspec'd measure, but to the first measure, you see this as a care coordination measure for HIV.
To my mind, it is. To my mind, that the details of the measure are that you need to have two visits within the calendar year with a certain, they can't be too close together, so it can't be one today and one tomorrow. And so you perform well if the patient has those visits in the calendar year, and you don't perform well if the patient has only one and doesn't have the subsequent follow-up visit.
So, Heidi, have you got any update on that? Is 403?
Yeah, so that measure is actually going to go through maintenance, but we'll see how it does. But it's the percentage of patients, regardless of age, with the diagnosis of HIV/AIDS with at least one medical visit in each six-month period with a minimum of 60 days between each visit.
To any physician or to a specific?
It would be to the same physician because this is a clinician-level measure, so it's within that practice.
It's not necessarily their primary care. It could be who's ever managing their infectious disease.
Correct.
Yeah.
So for the purposes of the Meaningful Use Program, it would be the eligible provider who selects to use that as their measure. And then if they want to do that, they'll be measuring all their HIV patients. They don't get to just measure one. But if you choose it as a menu measure, then you are measuring all of your HIV patients and did they receive care in the guideline appropriate time frame.
Okay. Could I just open that up to the group for consideration for inclusion and ask for any comments? Mary? Sure.
I just wanted to echo what Kevin said about the fact that a measure like this, and maybe HIV is not the perfect example, but I think in some of the other care coordination journeys, it was mentioned earlier, you know, is this just for obesity or is this just for one slice? The question, I think, is more, as Kevin said, can you think of a construct that incents the practice to do things structurally that it's very unlikely to end up only doing for one little bit of patients? If they're doing it well and they figure out how to do it, they're going to be doing it for improving care for everybody. And that's maybe not if I'm an ID specialist and I only ever see HIV patients, but for many other kinds of providers, there's an importance to thinking about getting your foot in the door, I think, to making them think about their systems for how they do population health and population management.
And do we know who the measure steward is on this?
It's a joint NCQA PCPI measure.
It's a joint. So you're speaking as the steward? Okay. Okay. As a half steward? All right. So, I mean, hearing nothing, we don't include from the group. And we just leave the measure as it stands. Dolores? Okay. Anne-Marie?
I think it's something that should be supported. I think this really speaks to the whole issue of follow-up and patients really being engaged in care, coordination of care. It's a beginning step, but I think far ahead of a lot of the other things that we've looked at. So even though it is just for HIV, I also agree that if it takes off, then they can use it for others. So I would be in favor of including it.
Okay. Favor. Any opposition to speak to opposition? David?
Yeah, HIV is such a special focal area. I just don't see that this is going to lead to spreading to other areas. Pretty siloed part of care, isn't it? Because it would be better to start in an area where there's more different kinds of patients and it would logically spread.
Jane?
Just a question. I think the measure actually sounds like a great one to include. My only question is I know there's some HIPAA issues with HIV, and I don't know if they come to play.
So we certainly test all that. I mean, that's
okay.
Part of the whole process and the testing to assure that all that is the case. You know, this only happens if the patient's already in care. So the way that you're measured, you have to darken the door once, and then the patient enters into the into the measurement denominator.
Nancy?
So, David, I'm sort of in your camp because it is usually a fairly specialized area of care, but I want to get a look at some of these measures that are only able to be crafted now that we have some EHRs. I want to test the possibility of that and, you know, toe in the door here. Let's get started with HIV and see what we learn from that could then be transferred to substance abuse, other people who have lots of chronic issues where we know that periodic physician visits are essential to good outcomes, diabetes, obesity, whatever.
Dana?
So let me make sure I wasn't listening to this with half of an ear, but on this HIV measure, that the concept was is that about, again, the communication and facilitating coordination of care between primary care and referrals. No, or was that a separate one?
The referral is a separate measure. Okay. This measure really is if a patient with HIV or AIDS comes to you as a doctor, then get a high score if that patient has the subsequent follow-up visits with you. You get a low score if that patient is lost to follow-up care. So that means if the patient never returns, then you don't perform well. But if the patient does return in the guideline recommended amount of time, which is at least one visit in each six-month period, then the patient fulfills the measure.
How do you capture if the patient went to change their mind and went to a different provider?
You don't.
Oh.
Not the way the measure is currently specified. You capture in your practice the patients that you see, not if it's across.
There are some exclusions for things like the patient moved away, the patient is incarcerated, patient died. Those are all exclusions that can be reasons that you would exclude that patient from the denominator in the details of the measure specification.
Amy?
I actually kind of had the same thought that Nancy did when I was hearing about this. I mean, HIV is really specialized, but I immediately went to, wow, how could we use this in, say, depression care or in other, you know, other conditions where, you know, it's so important to kind of have that cycle of follow-up and reevaluation. And I think it's a really intriguing concept, and I'd be interested to see, you know, how we can use it more.
Anne-Marie, is yours still up?
I really don't think that it's that specialized in the area of care coordination. I think HIV has actually been a leader in care coordination in some ways relative to the same issues as we have with mentally ill, with substance abusers, with chronic diabetes, et cetera. So a lot of what they've put in place in terms of their integrated model is actually what other people are picking up on. So I think they can actually be leaders in this, and I think that they do a lot, tons of care coordination. That's what good HIV practices do. So I think it really is very applicable. I don't think it's an outlier.
Okay. So I'm hearing consensus to support inclusion of this measure.
I missed the part where you said it is endorsed or it's not endorsed.
It is.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, it's in maintenance right now. Okay. We'll include it. Well, then, if we could, Mary, let me turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being given the opportunity to talk to you all. And let's see. So I realized that this task force met in June and had a presentation from my colleague, Aaron Giovanetti. So I'm going to apologize if there's too much that I say that you've already heard. But I think that what I'm going to try to do is jump to the sort of issues that are most relevant to the care coordination element, your last time being convened and focused on patient safety. So hopefully this will be useful. So just to remind you that NCQA goes through a number of steps in preparing concepts to become draft measures and then specifying draft measures to become field testable measures and then other stakeholder involvement to before finalizing measures. And then that all happens before we bring it to NQF for endorsement. So we're busy. The criteria that NCQA uses for desirable measures are here. It's not different than other criteria you will have seen, but just to point out that the relevance, some of the issues that come up with other with some measures, I think, that are sort of notably different for care coordination are things like controllability, when, in fact, care coordination is in no one's hands but the clinician's. or in no one's hands but the practice or the team. So that I think speaks to the high priority that the MAP has put on this this sort of sector. The scientific soundness, of course, is a little bit tricky, a little different sometimes when you're thinking about care coordination as opposed to what's the clinical evidence that X screening intervention saves lives. Because here you're looking at literature that's likely to be heterogeneous, that's likely to use a number of interventions and not just one at a time. So it's challenging in some of those ways as well. So just, again, for those who might not be familiar with NCQA, the measures that NCQA creates and maintains include structural measures, process measures, and outcome measures. The settings, no measure is specifications are complete without tailored seams for what setting it's meant to fit. And so the settings that are listed here, these are not exhaustive. The health plans, of course, where NCQA began its work, but provider measures that we, you know, as we just heard, we've teamed up with PCPI in creating measures that are used in the PQRS arena. Also, some sets of measures for ACOs in our sort of initial steps into an ACO accreditation program. Regional and community measurements. So when states, Kevin mentioned work with SAMHSA, so there you might imagine that groups of community health centers or groups of community mental health centers might have goals for their catchment area, and so that kind of thing is what I think NCQA is starting to work with measures for states in terms of Medicaid programs, in terms of dual eligible populations. So there might be ways in which the accountable population is not just a health plan, but really a whole state. And then at the bottom there, I've mentioned a couple of priority data sources that, you know, NCQA having, again, made its 20-year history basically in claims-based measures is seeking to move, follow ONC into the 21st century and figure out how to advance the methods that are used for the collection of measure data. So patient-reported measures we see as hugely important. The use of electronic health records also, obviously it's where the future is, and so we have to be ready and be really active in that arena. This is a listing of the care coordination measures that NCQA currently has in our library that we seek to maintain NQF endorsement for. They mostly are focused on the ambulatory care setting, and I realize that is, makes potentially a minority of the things that you all have been considering because of the broad scope of this committee in looking at hospital and other post-acute care settings. So, but mostly the NCQA measures that exist are in the ambulatory care setting. You've heard about some of them in the last couple of days: plan all-cause readmission, advanced care planning, follow-up hospitalization after hospitalization for mental illness. All of those, I think, were on either yesterday's or today's agenda. The medical home system assessment, which, as you've heard, is still in the process of the NQF endorsement sequence. And then a few concepts that are under development right now: potentially avoidable hospitalizations using ARC's PQI sort of set of avoidable hospitalization measures. There's been some challenges as you try to move from a level like a state where that works pretty well to be a marker of adequate primary care to avoid hospitalization for these reasons. But when you go down to a smaller N of a health plan or, God forbid, a provider group, you have trouble generating enough, numbers in the cells to make a reliable measure. And then there are structure and process measures that are currently being developed for use in specific programs. I mentioned the fact that NCQA has foundation funding to work on developing measures for entities that are taking care of patients covered by both Medicare and Medicaid, the dual-eligible population. And to the degree to which, as we've was said about HIV, I think it's also true about the dual eligible population. So this is the, you know, these are folks who are the most in need of highly coordinated care. And so I think if we can take some of those things that we learn from either the special needs plans, which is a subset of Medicare Advantage plans, which, you know, focuses on chronically ill folks, and a few of them actually focus on dual eligibles, or if, as we go forward in learning about what we could put in place to help states as they move this population of dual eligibles into, you know, different accountable settings, whether it's managed care plans or ACOs, that we can try to really push that forward so that we can make better, have a better understanding of what will it take for an organization like that to do a good job taking care of this vulnerable population. The challenges that we find to developing measures, of course, will be not unfamiliar to any of you. The fact that the evidence base is not extensive or deep necessarily for some of these, in some of these areas. Boy, the accountable entity question is really coming to the fore. You know, of course, part of the concern for accountable care organizations as they, in their infancy, it's a question of how will they know who are the people they're responsible for or not. And so if they don't know, then how can they report a measure that has a denominator in it if they can't keep really figure out who all those people are? Risk adjustment. So, of course, you know, NCQA is really very interested, as I know NQF is, in moving towards more outcome measures and not just process measures. But as we think about outcome measures, how do we stratify or risk adjust to ensure that comparisons between, whether it's between health plans or between states or between counties or between ACOs, that they're fair and that there aren't major differences in outcomes that aren't a result of the baseline patient population risks. Unintended consequences, of course, the sort of hallmark concern is if we are going to measure outcomes, well, I'm just going to fire all my patients who I know are going to do badly. Right? I'll make it harder for them. I'll have a walk-up office. That's what I'll do. I'll get rid of the elevator. And then only the people who can really, you know, come up those two flights will want to be my patient. And then I'll have really better outcomes because they're healthier people. And then finally, developing measures is resource intensive. And so NCQA has been really very, fortunate in the last couple of years in working with ONC and with CMS on a number of contract-driven work to develop measures. And so, you know, we want to apply what we know about measure development to these new areas and apply everything that we have learned from the health plan world and the reporting world there's no questions about accountability in the health plan world, or at least there haven't been. So they know who the denominators are, and they can report. They report the measures, whether they can use an EHR sometimes, or whether they can only use claims, or if they're doing chart reviews even. There's not a question about who's in there. On the margins, yeah, I know there are still problems about what, you know, people change their names, but for the most part, they know who their patients are. And so, how can we take key points about that we've learned from how that works and apply it over to systems where accountability is a little less rock solid? And so this question that came up earlier about the HIV patient who maybe goes to one doc in April and then a different one in October, and which of the clinicians they see should be the accountable one for the purposes of a measure. I'll just mention a couple of possible future directions, things that we're bouncing around a little bit and things that I just maybe personally would like to see NCQA moving in directions that we think about de novo measurement, just as Kevin was talking about, across platforms. So if we have electronic systems in hospitals and in post-acute care settings, let's try to push the envelope and, you know, create the incentives for them to talk to each other. So maybe, Frank, this is a chance to have a little bit of a ground floor, because if the post-acute care settings are just getting their electronic, just electronifying themselves, you know, could we make it that they see as part of the goal of why they're even doing that is to improve the coordination of care from referring hospitals to them and improve the coordination of care from them out to the community when the patient is, you know, when it's a rehab sort of situation and a patient is done being there. So I think that's a high, I'm hopeful that that's a high impact area where we could use what we know to highlight cross-institution responsibility and accountability that will improve the care for patients. The other thing that is happening, and this goes also a little bit to what Kevin was saying about, you know, re-specifying things that we have had for other areas and making them into sort of e-measures was what he was talking about. Well, and I've been thinking a little bit, I guess, on a different axis of how can we take measures that we have about structure or process and then think about how they could be, how the bar could be raised so that they would be appropriate measures of care coordination. So right now, the special needs plans, which are, as I've said, a subset of Medicare Advantage, have a number of care coordination type measures. Care for older adults measures in the special needs plans, and then in the NCQA is currently planning a sibling program. So to the patient-centered medical home recognition program, a specialty neighbor possible recognition program that would provide incentive for practices that partner with patient-centered medical home to be engaged in the kind of two-way communication that will improve the care for the patients. And so it's still in the draft stages. It's just been, I think, the whole last month on our website for public comment. But I think of that as a source for where we might find structural or process measures and then turn them into measures of care coordination, not just do you send a referral and do you get instructions back, but, you know, how well did the patient understand what that specialist told them? And how has your care plan, right, back at the PCMH, been updated to incorporate this, you know, this new information, new recommendation you got from the specialist? So those are just, you know, some of the ways that I think there are directions in which we can move to try and improve the measurement of care coordination and the measurement of outcomes in related to care coordination. So I'll be very happy to answer any questions or discuss this.
Wow, that's a lot of activity. We've had a lot of conversation the last 2 days identifying a whole slew of gaps and opportunities, and you've got a measure developer in front of you. So fire away. This is the time to engage and get some feedback. Richard?
Yeah, I have some couple questions on as it relates to special needs plans and duals. And I think a challenge for all of us that's not isolated to duals and special needs plans. One is, and it's in relation to this care coordination kind of strategy. One is, from a little earlier, Kevin talked about kind of you get what you incent and you get what you measure. Plans have incentives on the regulatory side. Plans have incentives on the measurement side. In care coordination, CMS has requirements for care coordination. That are different than the implicit requirements on the structure process measurement side. As an example, as part of the measurement process on the NCQA side, there's a major focus on care transitions. There's not on the requirement side. Special needs plans are required to have a care plan, to have comprehensive care plan for every enrollee, you know. And so care management is a big deal issue for special needs plans. And there's a set of regulations that relate to what you have to have in place in order to be responsive to the requirements as it relates to special needs plans. Some of that includes very extensive detailed requirements as it relates to interdisciplinary care teams. The care management measures don't address that to the same level. Care management on the policy side is a very generic umbrella kind of concept. Care management on the measurement side is a very focused, complex care management kind of orientation. So we've got some disconnects going on in terms of, you know, what people are required to do versus what you're measured to do. And theoretically, in our mind, in the SNP Alliance, you know, the relationship is you're required to do these things. That should be policy. How well you do them, that should be measurement. But there's not that kind of connection in order to be able to apply that kind of logic, you know, to how one relates to regulators and evaluators. The process also comes into play in relation to states and CMS, where for the same measure, HEDIS measures as an example, plans will need to collect a separate, go through a separate data collection draw process for the Medicaid side for the state and the Medicare side for CMS, even though it's the same measure. You know, so there's not an alignment of processes around oversight, and some states don't trust the process that CMS does, and CMS doesn't trust the process that the states have, and so that there's, you know, there's disconnects in relation to that process. And then, you know, we really appreciate the focus, you know, that you've given to this, because it's structure and processes that just didn't exist before, and we have to keep going. On some of the measures, there's some questions about whether the extent of data collection that's involved for a particular structure and process measure has value. It's kind of playing some plans question the value proposition of the data collection process on some measures. And so I think that's another thing that's useful for us to kind of build in the process. And then the last thing I want to note here is just NCQA's principle of parsimony runs directly in the opposite direction of way things happen in the real world, you know, in the sense that NCQA will develop a family of measures and, you know, or a set of measures. National Quality Forum identifies a family of measures. And what tends to happen is all of those kind of get added to. If they were missing before, they get added, but nothing ever gets taken away. And even though we may need, you know, in this room, look at a set of measures and say, no, these aren't important, and these are, it doesn't always happen in the real world. And so another place, I think, for people who do development of measures and you know, and endorsement of measures is helping retire measures on the policy side as well. And I know that that's part of, in some ways, what the recommendation and focusing on family measures is. But I think it still becomes, you know, in the collective, if a hospital has 1,500 measures or, you know, that they or a plan or whatever the number is, which ones are really the most important? You know, which ones are added value? You know, and we had one of the most interesting meetings with a group of medical directors that I had with special needs plans in trying to sort out measurement was I said, okay, let's assume that you can only collect 5 measures. From all of the measures you have, that would be most important to identify whether you're doing a good job in serving high-risk populations. You know, the ones they came up with were hospitalization rates, emergency room visits, adverse drug events, consumer satisfaction, long-stay nursing home visits. Now, whether that's the right set of measures or not, you know, I'm not here to say those are the ones that should be collected, but I think another challenge for us is in the development of new measures and the measurement process, what is the value proposition of the measurement expectation that any group has? You know, if you are there too many measures? You know, are there some that really are more valuable than others? If you could identify five for achieving certain results, which ones would you identify? And then do you do something different with those measures, given the evidence base or whatever that you might otherwise do if you haven't gone through that, your own kind of a value proposition relative to the relative importance of the measures that you have?
Okay.
And we have till 3 o'clock.
I can't take responsibility for what the federal government did when they set up Medicare and Medicaid the way they have, the way we did.
To be clear, there's no blaming here. You know, from my standpoint, you know, there's we have lots of good people, and in the process, there's systems that don't enable us all to do what we really want to do. So I'm trying to also not cast stones at CMS either. There's lots of good people over there. You know, so
let's keep our dialogue going.
Right. Well, and certainly plenty of the people who voted for Medicare Act are no longer serving, and so we can anyway. We have to move on. But so the I think the question about how policy requirements interconnect with measures is an excellent point, and I think that you know to the degree to which the regulatory environment has one set of goals and generally kind of one set of tools, it's often maybe orthogonal to measures. But I would certainly agree that if there's a case where there's actual conflict between something that's required by data collection for measurement and how it either gets in the way of or is made impossible or harder by the regulatory environment, I think that's really important to think about. And so, I think I will take that back and we'll try to look at what we've, you know, how the SNP measures work in that way or potentially don't work. I think, you know, the question of parsimony is an often returning conversation and unlikely to be solved by any one measure developer alone. I think of course, NCQA is both a measure developer and a user of measures. So on our, you know, the side of our organization that accredits health plans, we are absolutely looking at the question of how to retire measures, how to choose the highest value measures to use for accreditation. And some of that methodologic work is really just beginning. And so I think it's a, you know, watch that space. The general, just like NQF, you know, has this problem of, well, here's a gap area and there's no good measures for schizophrenics. So does that mean that we've already got too many measures, so we're just not going to care about the quality of care for that population? Or do we say, okay, well, we've got to make some efforts in that are specific enough to the care of that population so that they're available for the people who need to use them to use them? But, it's an excellent question and an ongoing discussion.
David?
Back to filling measure gaps, you've told us about the good work that you're doing on care coordination. We had another discussion this morning about an area that just seems to be pleading for measure development, and that's in care planning and shared decision making. And we define care planning as something that involves the provider and the patient working together. So this is focused on, you know, is information getting around across silos, provider to provider? But what about the provider to patient care planning, shared decision making piece? Do you have some work going on there?
As it happens, my colleagues in the research group at NCQA are working on
shared decision making in a way that I think is unlikely to result in a measure in the next couple of years. So I'll just tell you why. The for a long time, we have been, you know, concerned in the measure development world with specifying what do we mean by smoking cessation counseling. What do we mean? You know, who's the kind of provider who can do that? And those are questions with a defined set of options, right? In, you know, provider type A through H, and you go through, you know, can make an argument for or against and pick out which ones, you know, should be included. So there's some degree of menu selection. There's enough knowledge about what's effective smoking cessation counseling that some smart people in a room for a day could pick out what are the points that must be included for CMS to pay for it or for, you know, whatever entity to measure based on that. Shared decision-making is, I would argue, a little younger of a science than smoking cessation counseling. And so our confidence about what are the key elements that must be there or what, you know, what are the must-have elements that make a good shared decision-making conversation are not yet in a drop-down menu. And so I think we could convene the people, smart people, and put them in a room for a day, and I don't think that they would come up with anything that looked like a really good, broadly applicable measure of shared decision-making yet. I think providers are... Some providers do it sometimes. Some providers do something like it, but they don't call it that. And so the recognition of what is this, what are these conversations meant to be, and who has enough knowledge and actually has a framework in their back pocket so they can pull it out and use it with, you know, when a patient interaction would require it, because not every single patient interaction would necessarily require it. And so I think that's what we're learning in this research project is how the common lingo is not yet established so that every provider could say, oh, yes, that's this, and I'm doing that, or I'm going to, for this patient who's scheduled in my 2:30 block, I'm going to do that. But I don't, that doesn't mean we can't get there, but I just think that it's still a younger science and needs to be developed deliberately.
Have you engaged with the folks at the Foundation for Informed Decision Making? It's got a new name now, but there seems to be a lot of expertise there, some experience, and even a beta version of a survey, if I understand it.
Yes, we are engaged, and I think at several levels with the Foundation for Informed Decision Making, or whatever the name of it is now, yes. But I think that the issue is to the degree to which there are pockets of excellence in developing understanding of what should happen, it is still far from commonly spoken about by practicing clinicians in a way that uses those that language.
Ask the patient is the right answer.
I think lots of clinicians think that they're asking the patient already.
For measurement, ask the patient.
Oh, ask the patient if you were, right, if you were engaged in a shared decision making. There is an item on the CAPS survey that it doesn't exactly go to this, but that has a question about how were options discussed with you for treatment. So I think that there are beginning pieces in several different places. Maybe that's the way, maybe further development of things like that CAPS item would be a way to go, you know, broadly into larger samples of patients.
Just to jump in, Mary, the FIMDIM does have a whole series of condition-specific decision quality measures that are under development. We've been talking with them about submitting some of them to us.
The FIMDIM?
The Foundation for Informed Medical Decision Making, which may be why they have a new name, because it's hard to say.
Yeah, that's got to change. So, Mary, we actually identified a whole slew of areas that we think there are opportunities over the last 2 days, and we would hope that your organization has an opportunity to look at them. I can't list them all, but optimal manage of pain, linking pain and depression, better sepsis measures. We noted a ton of measures that needed to be expanded across their current applicability down into delivery systems in multiple areas. There was a big call today for patient experience of care CAP type surveys that were more explicitly addressing coordination of care. And David actually brought up all these screening documentation measures that have care plans in them should have accepted patient acceptance of the care plan. So a whole list of really, I think, robust gaps, and this is, I'm just scratching the surface of all the gaps that were mentioned, and we think it'd be great if you took a look at that as well, thought about those in some sense of a priority, because I think the group identified many, many more opportunities from the measures we have for new and better measures. Well, I want to thank you for your time and coming over and joining us today. Let me just ask the operator to open the mic for any public comment at this time.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. At this time, there are no questions.
And in the room? Well, we've come to the end of our journey for this one, and I cannot thank you all enough. I really think it. We might have started out slow, but I think you were laying a foundation. I think it was a very important foundation, and it allowed you to move and really add an enormous amount. Lindsay was counting out her pages of notes. I think she's going on vacation. I said, did you bring a novel? She said, no, and I said, bring the notes. So. But we're going to have to translate this into something for the coordinating committee, and I think we have just an incredible amount of content, really excellent context for all this discussion. So I want to thank all of you, and before you leave, I actually want to thank our staff, who once again do a phenomenal job.
Well, and what about our chair, who not only keeps us on track when we meet, but keeps the staff on track in between times. So thank you very much, Frank.
So we are adjourned. You have one more?
Just one reminder to you all. We have next Monday already, we have an all-math call. You can see our kind of crazy math timeline up there, but the circle around the yellow box is the all-map call. It takes place this Monday at noon Eastern, I believe, noon to 2, and we will be giving sort of a progress report and update on the strategy task force, these families, and the cardiovascular diabetes families that have been in development, as well as a little bit of pre-rulemaking analysis, I think, as well. So that call is on Monday.
And we're adjourned. Safe travels.